Welcome to Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I am Pamela Spoto, poet and host.
In my heart, in my brain, on my tongue, behind my teeth. Behind my eyes, on my tongue, under my skin, in my heart. In my veins, under my skin, behind my teeth, on my tongue, on my tongue, on my tongue.
We are broadcasting from KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain. We will host a monthly poetry show the very last Saturday of the month at 10 p.m. So here we go. We are doing something a little bit different for Late Night Poetry Jam this evening. On August 12th, a Friday night, the Performing Arts Society invited 8 poets to read at the Pilgrim Congregational Church. It was called An Evening of Poetry, celebrating the diversity of language. The evening lasted a little bit longer than what our Late Night Poetry Jam show allows for, so we're going to need to edit it just slightly. And Melinda Brown, the wonderful Melinda Brown from Reading, was the MC for the evening. And so she is going to begin.
First is Scott Yates, and his wife Naomi is going to help out. And Scott grew up in Cottonwood, and he taught for years in Yemen. And he now teaches English at Shasta College. He lives in Reading with his sublime spouse, Naomi, and 4 frisky children, and alliteration. And in poems about Yemen, family, and other miscellany, Scott seeks to attend to the sounds of his subjects and explores the mysteries of human experience.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay, so I have 2 readers for this first poem because trying to capture both feet of cycling. Cycling Sulphur Creek Hill. Cycling.
Cycling.
Sulphur Creek Hill keeps me alive.
Sulphur Creek Hill can kill.
Climbing up the spring green slope.
1 green light signaled death.
Pumps my hope and joy, dew and blood.
The reaper ran a red.
Dawn's breeze is sweet with lupin.
Blew by in a stinking Lincoln.
Cycling.
Cranking the shoulder, ISA.
Along the bike lane lay.
Yesterday's prey, a cat.
Dollar bills one morning.
Calico, flat, abuzz with flies.
A sacred text in leather.
Mouth gaping, stained, it dies.
Rich, red with underlining.
Cycling.
And glassy marbles rolled astray.
Like gray possum, 10 yards away.
Sparkling golden, white, and navy.
A soiled diaper, smashed whiskey.
Ribbons of colored earth awake.
And a belt-shaped rattlesnake.
Cycling.
Litter the oil-stained pavement.
After rain, streams trickle in.
Weeds, thorny burrs, cut cracks.
Spontaneous cataracts.
Cycling.
Through vines, cobbles, heaven.
Through hell and summer's burn.
Pedaling, foot forward.
1 foot plunges earthward.
Cycling.
I brake to avoid a crash.
I crest the miracle mile. Stop.
While the hill keeps cycling.
See the mountains smiling.
Cycling.
Cycling. Okay, something you need to know for this next poem, for it to make sense, is that I have 4 children. The first 3 were boys. The last one was a girl. Vasectomy. All I could hear was the snip of the scissors, and my line was cut off at 4. No more surging sea, men springing forth from my loins. Lady Liberty was last. Setting me free from fecundity and more fresh incarnations of joy. Saving rubber trees, scorning IUDs, is life now severed from mystery? I stare out across the feral floor of an empty factory as white eels wriggle off into the darkness beyond fortune's wheel. Words well up and spread across the land. We live in a whirlwind of words, where words well up and wash across the land, pouring from our laptop screens, running like cheap spilled ink from corners of our phones. Texts leak, drip into the flood, 4 feet deep, murky brown. Our jeeps are overturned and drowning. We flail for a raft of calm, dry, wordless space, but overflowing words roll like rivers from our mouths, and minds are soaked, saturated, sagging under the weight of words. Just stop talking. Words exhaust us. Refugees of Facebook, arguments, emails, conversational chats. Words. Pablo Neruda writes about them. Many words, poems about words, la palabra, palabra, word, the word. The words I want to say wallow in wordiness. When I say words, any words, repeated often enough, reformed, restated, revised, revitalized, the word I mean ceases to mean, and meaning, meaning nothing, dies. Word up to words. I'll have a word with you. The word of the day, word of power, magic words, word from on high, a whirlwind of words sweeps my words away. 'Twas something, nothing, 'twas mine, 'tis his, and has been slave to thousands. But all these words filch from me my good word and rob me of whatever it was I was thinking, meaning. The word of God. I need a word made flesh. Do words dwell among us, or do we dwell among words? These words were written that I might pour them out on you. Then, slowly, listening, take nearly every word away till only a few. And you mean something. Okay, if you wonder why I'm dressed strangely, these next two poems should explain. This poem starts off with a reference to the former president of Yemen. And it's written during the revolution when I was in Yemen and Naomi, my wife, was here in the States with our kids. Okay, from Yemen, with love. Ali Abdullah Saleh has returned while we recount our love in whispers, one more time through microphones separated by countless kilometers. Admire each other's lidded eyes in the shadowy gloss of our computers. Watch each other's breasts sink and rise, fogging the screens. Our breaths escape their chambers. Hear our hearts thumping like spies, hearts gravid with secrets and ciphers. Catch artillery's alluring cries and puffs, mixing music with generators. And everyone knows that those gunshots are lies, imitating the drum beats for dancers and the shouting of holiday shoppers. Crouching to kiss through a screen and a wire, we relish Yemen's romantic gestures, a burst of bullets and celebratory fire. And as Yemen's still in a terrible time, things keep getting worse there. I just want to remember people there at this time. It can always get worse, but the Yemenis can always take more. Okay, my last one, the aftermath. Rest recurs when the restless go west, when the rest, the rabble-rousers, fanatics, instigators, refrain from hustling, bustling, rustling up some grub. And only space remains. Out west, with sky, smooth sky on the horizon, with infinitely deep valleys, grooves that split space-time, peaks upon peaks stretching up like sentinels staring far away, and the snowy silence opening up an eternal gap in the grand scheme. Sabbath happens. Whatever is imposed, forced, professional, dissipates. Peering out from the old world east, as the outcasts of civilization pour out their sweet, raging blood against the glorious cross, the quietness of God and the violent granite. On our behalf, for all our sins. Hear, O people of the book, computer, system, only way. Remember, all you knowers, the Sabbath is this, the aftermath of rupture, earthquake, famine, fire, sword. Drink in the broken body, then you will be lords.
Our next poet is Dr. Sharon Brasileiro. She's the Associate Dean of Access and Equity at Shasta College, and she's a poet, educator, program evaluator, mother, and feminist researcher. As a writer, she is drawn to understanding the forces that shape us and how we as human beings shape the world. Poetry is a way of seeing, a mode of inquiry, and desperately needed expressive form. She believes in the power of poetry to move us to presence and towards social justice and to nurture the reader's own creative expression. Her favorite poems are, at heart, an invitation to do just that, to slow down, be present, and engage. Sharon.
Totally forgot about the bios. I sound super fun, right? Sounds like, want to party with that woman. My first one is called Reflections on Mind. Hear that? My maternal uncle in the attic, shaking his ruddy jowls, savage eyes scouring where they fall, searching target for his fury. That's why I duck after climbing ladder, press myself on cold musty, pull on ends of cardboard boxes that give in my hands till I am behind pine pallets, near the cracked window where fear blown out of lips like O's is swallowed by starlings, fat already on all that comes through holes in the eaves where they summer, too heavy now to leave. Even now there is frost on glass, early mornings, fog white as the setting moon. Postcard. Postcard. Dear John, we arrived bubble-wrapped, a bit intoxicated by cabin pressure and the altitude on landing, where young, shirtless men laid banana leaves at our feet, one wide leaf cupping rice topped with cloves and cardamom. There was pepper and coffee in the wind, and it made me think of you, and whether or not you would see the golden rose spreading over the hills and wonder why weren't we closer to ocean, when the ocean is in the wind, and now on my shoulders, my skin salty, pork lime sweet, it makes me feel alive and sleepy at once. As I lay on the sand without towel, fingering grains that have come from where and how, these worn down pieces of something we take in and forget, I relish each one and all the places these tiny crystals may go. Certainly I will carry some home without knowing where they are there, without intention. None, worry not, will trouble your bed. Waiting for CAT scan results. So I had these issues, I went in, and the doctor, you know, in his really good bedside manner says, well, so you either have, I forgot what the other thing was, or pancreatic cancer. So why don't you get this result? And, you know, and then it took like 6 weeks for them to come back and all is good, but it was a long period. So, and this is waiting for CAT scan results. We pay. We pay to remember we are always dying. Always. To hear how and who is to blame for the shadow staining film or screen. I wait for the weight of the shadows to make itself known. Density is the murkiness to struggle over. So much has been swallowed, including the effort to keep so much out. Let me write this check. You tell me of the inevitability of my death. Send me scurrying to write a will, call my parents, consider what I leave. I imagine your words. Months will winnow glittering desires. Tell me, gather the ones that shine. Lay them on your chest like warm stones, like babe to breast, like coins on eyes, like all things familiar, seen for what they are, utterly beautiful, unknowable. I pulled out this long one when it was a really busy week. So this is from, I visited, no FBI agents in the audience, right? I visited Cuba a long time before I was really supposed to. And there were a lot of young women, they called them jineteros. And they, and that there meant young women who would kind of hook up with tourists and, you know, and try to kind of make a living. And our Cuban friend who was taking us around explaining to us said, and the sad thing is that they give their love, like they are connected, they love, they think something's going to come from it. And so the whole thing was very moving. Canción de los Jineteros. Amici, my friend, please, a little of your tu abundancia. You say you have nothing, but your clothes belie you, my friend. Please, something you would throw away at home. Or leave with the trabajadores in the tobacco factory. We saw you through the window, leaving pens and cosmetics, pesos. I don't want it for nothing. I will give you my eyes to see the revolución. Todo es caro. Before, we all shared hunger for the patria, shared fear and confidence, clasped hands. We are proud of our struggle for winning a silent war while the whole world sleeps. You with warehouse of gun of drugs going bad, grain dying in the field, and we survive. For that, creamos en el socialismo. But now some can have more, and yes, I want. So friend, a little of tu riqueza, $2, and I will show you the Plaza of the Revolución, the Granma for $1 more, there behind glass where the guard sleeps. See, he wants more too. So I'll finish with this one that I wasn't going to read, but Scott, something Scott said made me want to read it. And on the 18th day of the 22nd century, God said, let humans be slower of speech, for their tongues create great trouble. And she consulted with Great Spirit, who said, with Buddha, who smiled and gently nodded, with Moses, who decided not to kvetch, but reminded her of the importance of transmitting wisdom. Mohammed said it was all written down anyway. She consulted former political leaders to be inclusive, but they had a hard time listening. Then God acted, and so it was. A gradual heaviness nestled in the mouths of men and women, as if small studs were added to the tongue upside down, requiring of those who chose to speak a physical activity they were slow to exert. And God sat back and pondered all that would not be there. Gossip and negative ads, I told you so, this better be good, sarcasm, judgment, racial slurs, betrayals, commercials, superfluous meetings, shock jocks, Rush Limbaugh. The visual arts would flourish, wildlife would grow stronger in the greater quiet, seagrass would overcome red plankton, and ozone would cover the firmament, ocean temperatures would cool, there would be bearable heat in the summer and cold in the winter, war tools would slowly be covered with louse, till children could play on new mountains safe from a dismantled evil. And so truly it came to pass. God hadn't counted on the baby boom, which proves what she'd been trying to tell humans since they tamed fire, omniscience isn't everything.
Okay. So our next poet is Nadia Hava Robbins. She's born in Prague, Czechoslovakia, founder and artistic director of the Traveling Bohemians and editor of the Bohemian Press. She is nationally and internationally published poet, has performed dance, poetry, storytelling, puppetry, and magic, all also in integrated combinations. And she's performed in major cities and festivals across the USA and Canada. She also appeared in a documentary produced by the National Film Board of Canada. Nadia.
Make me sound like a star. Gee. I only brought three poems, and I ask you to hold your applause, please, at the end, or never. The practice of Tai Chi. I am a child of this earth. Nature is my mother and my father, my teacher and my guru, my friend and my enemy. The obvious lies in front of me. All I have to do is close my eyes beyond seeing to unlock my insight to see below the surface. Cover my ears beyond hearing and hold my nose beyond smelling to unlash my intuition to sense with my entire being. Shut my mouth. Beyond talking, to let my spirit, my vitality, express its creative power. Keep my mind quiet, beyond disturbing, to concentrate my energy, my focus, to restore my innate awareness. When I'm still, I don't interfere with my stillness. I remain calm, peaceful, serene. When I move, I don't interfere with my movement. I allow the mind, the body, the legs, the arms, and the spirit to connect, blend, dissolve to one another, to become one united, efficient, dynamic power. I always thought a refuge is a sanctuary, a safe place in space and time. But I have come to realize it is also a state of mind. I would like to stay in stillness for a little longer. To feel the interval between each second and lose track of time. To synchronize my breath with the rhythm of the ocean waves. To see the colors you dream of without you telling me. To be closer to you than just close. To connect with the vibrations of the earth, penetrate the motion of my heart, simply open the window, listen to the symphony of silence for a little longer before the thoughts and words return. Sneaking into the solitude like little thieves, stealing the moment. And the last one is an extremely simple prayer. I have never written a prayer. So that was interesting. What came out? Quite simple. Voice. Let me hear your clear, free voice. Let it resonate and travel far. Let it be the joy in the harsh winter of our lives. Smile. Let it be the sun that shines. Let everyone feel the warmth, the rays that heal sorrow and pain. Let me see you smile. Peace. Like a flower in a bloom, the aroma of night and day, let it fill the air we breathe. Love. Let it open its wings. Let it fly over this earth. Let it unlock your heart. Let it seep deep into your bones. Let it seep deep into your soul. Let it embrace us all.
Thank you.
Next is Sarah McCurry, and she's a professor at Shasta College. Who finds it, okay, I wrote this one, haha. She didn't turn it in, so, okay. Okay, let me start again and enjoy this. Okay, Sarah McCurry is a professor at Shasta College who finds inspiration from her amazing daughter who has an amazing creative outlook. Sarah shares some of her daughter's insights with us in our poetry group, and we agree that she is amazing. But so is her mother, and so probably is her husband, Sean, too.
Let's see here. All right. Okay. So those of you, you know, who've been to poetry readings or who are poets yourselves know that it's kind of a cliche of poetry readings that at some point some woman will get up and read a whole bunch of poems about the bodily. So that's about to happen. That's me. so I guess I should apologize in advance. I don't know. But I just have three poems. So I guess I'll get started. This first one I wrote because, gentlemen, if you're a woman, this is a sign you're familiar with that you see as soon as you shut a bathroom stall. The title is called Dispose of Feminine Products Here, and then you see, you know, where you're supposed to go about that. Well, you know, when you have some time to kill, you know, you think about that, feminine products, and so that's, I thought, what does that mean exactly? And that's where this poem came from. My ruminations, I guess, on that lofty topic. Dispose of feminine products here. What they really mean, I suppose, is dispose of your blood here. But let's not make a fuss, ladies. Let's be discreet. Let's think of our blood as peculiarly feminine. Or rather, byproducts. Of course they mean those tidy little cotton inventions that help us not to make a scene. Some of which stopper us up like a corked wine bottle. Some of which are scented with fake feminine, fake flowers to mask the unsettling hint of iron. Let's just pretend none of this happened. If I say masculine products, what does that mean? Swords? Steam engines? Silicon Valley startups? Feminine products are troublesome to dispose of. Blood, milk, memory, people, words. Where some of your best ideas occur, I know. Okay. This next one is about bodies, but it's not about my own, so you can just kind of breathe a sigh of relief for a minute. We're coming to that, but my daughter had sent away for these little chrysalises that would transform magically into butterflies, right? And you get this little cage for them, and it's really kind of a neat project to do with your child, you know, and of course you're envisioning the end product, you know, the little cool chrysalises, and then these beautiful butterflies that come out after. It's a little different from what you might expect. So I wrote this poem about those transformations. It's called Transformations. As usual, we've been told a lie. The serene butterfly, that elegant silk handkerchief, emerges with triumphant ease from its chrysalis. Except it doesn't. But that's the story we tell. They begin as drab, pinky-length caterpillars, rippling along with intestinal muscle movements. They keep their faces to their food. They eat and eat and shit, because they have to. They finish their desperate feast. They begin to spin webbing fine as old man's hair from their bodies. Their bodies are becoming. There is no choice here but submission. The webbing lies below the place they fasten themselves, suspended, vulnerable, gently spinning like suicides. Their heads, or at least the shells of them, pop off as in some cartoon execution and keep strange sentinel on the ground. Their bodies dissolve and restructure, the chrysalis, the insides of them. Mother Nature waves her merciless hand, commanding, change into a beauty, shimmer and shake. When it's all over, they rip their way out for air, like anything being born. They let fly disoriented streaks of blood-red meconium. Exhausted and trembling, they wait for their wings, a crumpled mess, to dry and expand into glory. It isn't easy, this path to becoming. And later, as we wave to these luminous, transformed souls floating effortlessly as faith in the bright sky above us, the swallows watch carefully from the margins. Okay. Thank you. So this last poem, I'm not sure how this will work because there are a lot of voices in it, most of them not mine. It's called Self-Portrait with Collected Observations. as a woman, you don't get too far in life without collecting a lot of observations that have been made about your person or various parts of it. And I thought, well, you know, and I think this is true of the gentleman in the audience as well, you know, but I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to just put all that together and see what we have? So some of those observations are more positive and some are more negative. Generally, when I say my, I'm speaking about me, and then the other voices that come in with observations are the voices of other people, and so these are the accrued efforts here. So, self-portrait with collected observations. My bog trotter's potato nose, with its proud bump and snubbed bulb, its washerwoman's air.
Has your nose ever been broken?
I love your nose. Let me kiss your nose. I've always dated big-nosed girls. My bright blue eyes, with their confoundingly small size, their tininess made even more notable by glasses. You have really small eyes. Why are your eyes so small? Are your eyes really that blue? Why do you have an epicanthic fold? My little lips and fine hair. Your top lip is really thin. We have fine hair in our family. Fine hair looks good cut short. You can do anything with fine hair. It takes a cut so well. My legs that curve and jiggle. She said she didn't know you had bowed legs until she saw you on stage. Your legs could have better tone. I love your thighs. I'm going to bury my face between them. My round behind, like a birthday surprise on an otherwise Scandinavian-designed body. And I thought, who is this woman who looks like a bird with a nice ass? I love your big, plump ass. You're built low. My hands, my beauty. I love your hands. You're beautiful. I know.
You're listening to Late Night Poetry Jam. I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host. This is KKRN in Round Mountain. And we are listening to a recorded version from August 12th of Eight Poets at the Pilgrim Church.
So our next poet is being helped out by Jim. It's Pamela Spoto. She's a performance artist, an educator, an activist, lover of animals and other living things. She has published in numerous small presses, and she is a peace and sustainability activist and a good poet. So Jim Collins is going to accompany on All or Some. So this will wake everybody up with joy.
Thank you. Not that anybody was asleep. Yes, for some reason I'm nervous tonight. I'm not usually nervous when I read. This is my partner, Jim Collins. last year I was a funny poet, and I'm not funny this year, so I'm somber. And I'm going to do two poems. One is kind of a longish poem, and the other is not. And Jim has a wonderfully sweet voice and a beautiful drum. And he's of Cheyenne and Lakota ancestry. When I went to my first sweat lodge, I didn't know what to expect. And Jim was the pourer in the sweat lodge. And so I wrote a poem about that. And usually there are about four rounds in a Lakota sweat lodge. And they last maybe 3 to 4 hours total. And we don't get naked. Some people always say, oh, sweat lodges, you get naked. But we don't. And it's for purification and for healing. So this was my experience. The reason Jim is standing away a little ways is because the drum gets very loud, and then I can't hear my poetry. But no. He hides behind the piano. I said I wasn't funny. See, he's funny, says tonight. Okay. The first one is called Two Warriors and a Sweat Lodge Ceremony. Two Lakota warriors stand by the lodge fire, burning hot, logs standing on end, tops touching. One warrior has long brown hair and eyes like deep, dark, moist earth. The other warrior, hair long with eyes so blue, filled with sky. They are preparing for ceremony. One warrior takes a threaded needle, pierces the skin, stitches a feather into his arm. He stands there stitching feathers into arms. This is blood, sacrifice, blood to strengthen prayer. We gather in a circle in front of the lodge, 9 of us. I cradle a female pipe in my left palm. We smoke this pipe until there is no more. A black dog curls in the fire pit inside the lodge. He is coaxed out. Bending low, I enter the dark lodge. My place is right to the right of the warrior with eyes like sky. A warrior sits cross-legged on each side of the door. 7 stones hot are brought to the door. The warrior next to me reaches with antlers in each hand to receive the stone and places it in the small pit in front of us. 7 stones now sit in the center, each alive. From the top of the lodge hang strips of cloth, red, green, white, black, yellow. The door closes in darkness. The warrior with eyes like sky pours water on the stones. He begins to chant in Lakota for health, for forgiveness, for others, for me. He prays to grandfathers and grandmothers. Drums beat. The warrior with eyes like rich, wet earth sings, each calling to the other. Heat, chant, steam, prayers, heat, drumbeat, sweat. One heart, the warriors yell. The door opens. cool air breeze in, water. 7 stones, one by one, into the pit. The door closes. Prayers to grandmother, prayers to grandfather, prayers for forgiveness, prayers for others. Pray hard, the warrior with sky in his eyes says, I pray for Palestinians. I pray for Iraqis. I pray for Afghanis. I pray for all who suffer. I pray for each one who sits here. I pray for the warriors. One heart, the warriors yell. The door opens. I breathe in cool breath. 7 stones, one by one, the door closes. The warrior next to me says, this is the hottest round, pray hard. Water, rocks, heat, sweat, drumbeat, chant, release, heat, power, heat, strength, heat, darkness, spirit, heat, drumbeat, prayers, chant, heat, sweat, sweat, covered in smooth, slick, sweat, heat, sweat, smooth, spirit, release, skin burning, throat aching, skin sweating, slick, heat, burn, hot, heat, release, my skin is burning, I lay on cool earth, breathing hard, the warrior with eyes like sky says, pray hard, I pray hard, one heart, the warriors yell. He puts his open hand on my back and says, are you all right? I feel his hand and breathe cool air. 7 stones, the door closes. Pray hard, pray hard. I breathe. One heart, the warriors yell. 2 male pipes are passed until there is no more. You hand me a folded red cloth and say, put these on your altar. We stand in the middle of the dirt road between the mountain and canyon, 2 warriors and I. The warrior with eyes like dark, wet earth says, they fall to their knees, crying, saying, I can't go on. Then they get up and go on. You give me red clover for healing, sheep sorrel, turkey, rhubarb, burdock, slippery elm tea for healing, reishi mushrooms for healing. I receive all these gifts. I am blessed. At home, in front of my altar, I open the folded red cloth. Inside are all the feathers pulled from the arms of warriors. I pray hard. One heart, one heart, one world, one people. Pray hard. Heart, people, world, pray hard. One heart, one heart, one heart, one heart. And the other poem I'm going to read is short, shorter, much shorter. And it's one of my favorite poems, and I've read it in the past. It's about if we give something a name, I believe we're less likely to kill it. This is called Names of Things. I want to know the names of things. When I know the names of things, I can stop and really see. I can name burdock, red sorrel, calendula. When I know the names of things, I know sugar pine, ponderosa, Pacific yew. I know Zulu prince, white sage, Mexican sunflower. When I know the names of things, I have a relationship. I am connected to the other. When I know the names of things, I see beauty in golden eagle, black vulture, red-shouldered hawk. I see seal bay llama and black Arabian stallion. When I know the names of things, I see amaranth pull and dance toward the sun. I see mighty ashwagandha and holy basil bloom. I see sphinx moth kiss evening primrose, and I am drawn, drawn into this life force, this chi of things. I wonder why? Why I would want to bomb all this, use earth-penetrating weapons on it, plant landmines in rich, fertile soils or ancient desert sands, poison cold, delicious waters, cut and burn the huge old trees, fill the sky with air, I cannot breathe, I cannot breathe. When I know the names of things, let me call you by your name, not us and them. When I truly know your name, we become I and thou. Let me call you by your name. Khalid, Carlos, Amal, Che, Tuwa, Hugh, Hugo, Redtail, Felipe, Tala, Musa, Little Dog, Melita, Kalen, Cam, Fast Horse, Doug, Arij, Muna, Laureen, Akichita, Ahmed, Akichita, Akichita. May we learn the names of things. May we find the I and thou. May we feel the mountain's sweet embrace and the wind's enchanting songs. Let us kiss, kiss our lovers well, and love this Mother Earth and all the blessings she provides.
Thank you, Jim and Pamela. So next we have Michel Small. He's a former English professor at Shasta College, received his BA from Berkeley and MA and PhD at State University of New York at Buffalo. He loves to write, enjoys poetry presentations, and hates sending out work for publishing consideration, but he has been published nonetheless. He's won prizes and been included in anthologies. He tends to write more or less narrative poetry, though explores other modes as well. His favorite subjects to write about are food, children, love, human conflict, and the body. Michel.
Well, I always do like to read a food poem. I'm addicted to chocolate. This is one of the first poems I wrote, and a very good friend of mine suggested I read it tonight. So it's called How to Eat Chocolate. One must observe beginning, middle, and end, unity of time, place, and circumstance, indulge with Aristotelian grace. Each chocolate has its proper setting, heavy, grainy, thick bars with sourdough and strong red wine in warm fields. Or after a china and crystal supper, the finest toiture with champagne shared with an elegant companion. Today I begin with a lint dark truffle square, simple, in the middle of a small white plate. I wait while the chocolate warms and Mozart floats in the evening air, dreaming of past passion, the only other taste I will permit. A single candle lights the room. Between thumb and forefinger, I lift the square, pause a moment for teasing foretaste, and nip carefully one way, then the other, in a cross through which the soft interior oozes and coats my tongue. This is the moment of firm discipline, restraining the urge to bite and gulp in one great, obliterating swallow. My tongue passes over melting chocolate, spreading its velvet sweetness over my palate, where it lingers, and finally, slowly disappears down my throat. I pause, enjoying the denouement and delicious grace of such memories. This next one's about my daughter going through, I've had five children. I always enjoy the so-called terrible twos. This one's called Almost Two. She loves the sound of no, the feel and taste of it, her lips rounding, plumping, holding the note like an angel at choir, though not so angelic. Sometimes at some outrage like green beans before whipped cream or her crib before she wishes it, a shriek to blip phones or shatter saintly serenity punctuates her no. More often she plays with it, draws out the consonant, tongue vibrating against the palate, winding up long and delicious before delivering the full orbicular vowel, emphatic about socks she wears or wearing them at all. Or adds to it, pushing aside the interfering hand with a no, no, no way, not overheard slang, but no conflated with go away to clarify her meaning. She has a symphony of no's, some simple, others laughing, refusing to kiss, demanding, but never pleading, so many snips at the umbilicus. Her mind leaps outward with so much knowing, it is her resounding yes. This one's kind of a light poem about professional women, my admiration for them, with some apologies, anyway. Many men fear them, these battalions of brief-cased women in proper skirts and clicking heels marching with quick steps down marbled hallways. In the morning, scoured clean, each wayward tress braid into place, they dress like matadors for strength and grace. Silks and rayons and linens equally free of wrinkles, creased neat and formidable, adjusted to perfect fit, prepared for any snorting bull, magnificent against every furious charge or clever pass or not so clever paw. Whatever arena they choose, examination room, court of law, executive suite, suits them like perfect hose, runless as steel, snug as a sword in its sheath. I celebrate their success, their intent, competent minds, and especially those whose smiles breathe decision and warmth where woman and warrior are one. Such a woman can invest my capital, probe my organs, buy or sell my home, build a portfolio, hire me, fire me, and if my reverie carries me to the curve of her shoulder or thrills to soft tones behind her command, I also beg forgiveness, a little, and keep these thoughts to myself, a little. This one's a little bit more serious. It's a kind of a marriage poem, a marriage of many years, and I imagine the couple sitting across the table from each other. It's called Eyes. Doubt lingers in their eyes, gazing across a kitchen table, sometimes bridge, sometimes barrier, as the pendulum of uncertainty swings. Outside, a leaden moon hangs heavy in windless, soundless night. What is there to say? Once upon a time, mystery and longing fill the eyes, pristine intimacy, all evening dress and undress, filigree of fancy enslaved by first love. Old sepia photo dusted off in an attic, scarcely remembered. Too much is known. The air is thick with it. A gulf has widened with what has filled the years. Yet, despite dishes in the sink, alarm to be set, lawn to be mowed, trash day remembered, their eyes can touch across the table. If they are not the dream of each other, they are each other, separate. Less passion, more wistful wisdom of compassion, of tenderness, of hand laid on hand. My daughter, a little over about a year and a half ago, married a Jewish fellow, and the wedding was in Israel. And I visited the Shuk HaPishmishim, which is an old flea market in Jaffa. And this was about my experience there. Myths hang over the narrow streets of old Jaffa, where Perseus rescued Andromeda from sea-girded rocks, and Noah's son built a tower after the great flood. A town, I'm sorry, where Solomon imported cedars of Lebanon for the first temple, and where, among the alleys, a vision of acceptance visited St. Peter. Phoenicians, Greeks, Romans destroyed and ruled, as did crusaders and Arab armies, Richard the Lionheart and Saladin. Napoleon massacred inhabitants, slept in a church, and mourned plague victims. Yet down the hill overlooking the harbor, past a restaurant filled with connoisseurs of the finest hummus in the world, is the flea market. Clouds of the past dissipate among its cobbled alleyways and crowded streets, cornucopia of goods flowing from open shops. Persian tiles, silken Indian scarves, beaded necklaces, all manner of antique or simply beaten furniture. And of course, menorahs and hamsas, silver and otherwise. Merchants bark, then wheedle and cajole, but successful or not, smile and return to conversation. They enjoy the bounty of naive or intimidated tourists, but even more the bouts of loud bargaining, as if this testifies to the value of their wares more than shekels tossed into cash registers, an exchange at arm's length instead of the intimacy of contest. Arabs and Jews, Americans, Nigerians, and Indians all mix in these streets. Among the bustling and hustling, some may pay too much for goods. But amid the vibrant colors, polyglot of crowded bargainers, messy intimacy of semi-organized chaos, there is a hope of intimacy to stem the tides of violent history. Okay. One more. I've had trouble coming up with poem ideas, so I wrote this poem. It's called "A Poem Waits." Somewhere on this bright December day, a poem is hiding, waiting for me to find it. Perhaps it is written on one of the leaves, already fallen from trees and blown to gathering heaps in the corner of the yard or huddled against gutters in the street. Or perhaps one will fly out from books closed on my shelves, riding the back of some dead genius willing to part with an idea. I search through old journals, sheets of paper and forgotten files, torn corners of magazine pages for some scrap of thought or a lonely verse that will blossom on the blank screen before me. No such luck this day. I get up, search for my lover, my muse, and look deep into her lovely eyes, feeding on their gray-green depths. She knows it is not she I seek, and her eyes close. So I wait.
Thank you, Michelle. So our next poet is Linda Boyden. And she's an author, an illustrator, storyteller, a recovering teacher, and a poet. She's written 5 and illustrated 4 picture books called The Blue Roses, Powwows, Coming, Giveaways, an ABC book of loan words from the Americas, Boy and Poi Poi Puppy, and Roxy Reindeer. She's had many poems published in various literary journals. She belongs to the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, WordCraft Circle of the Native Writers and Storytellers, and Writers Forum of Reading. This is the heart of her, though. She spoils kids and grandkids, writes, teaches, and colors in or outside of the lines. In 2016 is her 5th year of writing a poem a day, so you need to get together with Michelle. She believes that poetry gives voice to our silent songs. Thank you, Linda.
Well, yeah, I'm obsessive, compulsive, and that's why I write a poem a day. Well, actually, the truth is, I was going to The Loft, and before that, Sue Java's Cafe with Nadia and Peter's spoken word, and I kept reading the same poems over and over and over and over. You know, it was embarrassing. So I was got for Christmas 2011, I think, received a little blank notebook from one of the many grandchildren, and I was thinking, oh, I'll toss it. You know, what am I going to do with that? And I thought, why don't you write a poem? You could write a poem in this. You could write one every day. And so, you know, it's just a good way to keep ideas flowing. And it's a jump start for my prose writing. So, yay. Anyway, this is so great. Thank you for inviting me. This a wonderful evening of poetry. 3 years before my father passed away, he went blind from macular degeneration. So poem number 1 is called Pale Eyes Empty. The morning my father went blind, I found it hard to breathe. The effort of taking air in and letting it out weighed me down the morning he went blind. The morning my father went blind, the echoes of his words I want to go to the mountains and die. Swelled inside my chest, grew into a cloud that filled my lungs the morning he went blind. The morning my father went blind, I wanted to take him by the hand, the way he had taken mine as a child, and lead him to his Tennessee mountains, to his beloved place, the morning he went blind. We'd walk along the trail, and I'd tell him the Cherokee story of the Valley of the Butterflies. Some say butterflies will come, thousands of dancing butterflies, to beguile you with their colors and lead you to your doom. But the trick, Daddy, the trick is not to look. He'd smile then, pale eyes empty, but face bright, knowing there was still something he could outsmart the morning my father went blind. So changing speeds here. My husband John, hey, photographer John Boyden, yay, thank you for coming and taking pictures. We go to, what's that Irish pub? Shameless O'Leary's, yeah, over there. And so this is called To the Young Couple in the Booth Across from Me. I mean, we're nice old people, and we're sitting there, la, 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 and I'm looking at this young couple. You looked into each other's eyes while above you five televisions blared five different games. And around you, Friday night happy hour cursed and howled, and waitresses in short kilts and knee socks danced past you. Blouses molded to their breasts, buttons strained, trays balanced on hands or hips, the bar reverberating with laughter, shouts, table smackings, chair scrapings. Through all of this, you held each other with your eyes. Never touching, not with fingers or legs, you held each other with your eyes and made love in a sacred way. Okay. I just write on random things, and whenever, you know, I wake up and I go, oh, I want to write about that. So this one is an older kind of love, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. This is, yeah. Okay, it's called When. It was a simple moment, peaceful, when holding hands slipped into embrace, when my fingers played with the curls on the back of your neck, when your hands rested between my shoulder blades, strong, warm, when we did not speak but held each other, breathed together, hearts in tune, and time roared around us a hurricane. So no matter how much we wanted, no matter how tightly we clasped each other, you still had to go, and I still had to stay. The old man in the park. He sat there alone on a green bench, his body stuttering under the weight of age. He sat alone. Behind him, squirrels darted among branches, scurried around trunks, tails to head, a dizzying frolic. He sat alone. Near him, children squealed, jumped from swings, skinned knees, tumbled in and out of laughter. He sat alone. Once or twice, his fingertips fluttered as a sound sparked joy in his heart. His eyes glowed as once again he walked within his country of memory. Do I have two more? Okay, is that okay? All right, so this is Carry Me. I read a book called, I forgot the title, but it was Carry Me Like Water. Carry Me Like Water by Benjamin Salier, Alier Science. It's a beautiful novel. But anyway, it inspired. I love the words. His words are beautiful words. It's prose, but it's poetry as well. So, Carry Me. In May, mountain snows flow to the river. Its curves and currents swell, strain their banks. As I hike, the river calls my name, a subtle, sweet pull, a yearning plea softer than a lover's whisper. Carry me, I pray, like something precious. Heal this fragile mess I have become. Earthquakes rumble through my veins. Memories collide in dreams, shatter every night. ama, water. You sing a healing song. Carry me home. Carry me like something precious. Yeah, I'm a recovering teacher of primary students. So, you know, I read picture books and I write and illustrate picture books. And I'm just sweet and kind most of the time. But, you know, the climate of 2016 is pissing me off, you know, pretty much. So this is my last one for tonight. There is a rage. There is a rage in me for grandmothers massacred, for aunts and sisters raped, for brothers and uncles whose hair was cut, whose tongues were silenced, whose hearts were beaten into alcohol. There is a rage. There is a rage in me for the two innocent men murdered this week because of skin color, nothing more. Because officers sworn to uphold the law and maintain peace saw color first and lost control. There is a rage. There is a rage in me for the rampage in Dallas. Innocent officers murdered this week because of the color of their uniforms, nothing more. Because angry young men had assault rifles, had pent-up emotions, and lived by a code of violence and revenge and lost control. There is a rage. My heart is heavy, but my soul has hope. Women, mothers know how violence only begets worse. Men, fathers know how darkness can only be conquered by light. Can only be conquered by light. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Linda. Okay, so I'm the last one. And Susie says you were training people. I wanted to share that each time I write a poem, I think, well, that's the last one. I don't have any more left. You know, there's nothing possibly else I can write about. Not that what I've done is so good, but, you know, I just don't have it in me. And then our poetry deadline comes up, and I'm writing something, you know, 20 minutes before, and then I'm finishing up on the steering wheel while I'm parked before I go into the, you know. But so you can find, you know, inspiration from anywhere, and you can feed off it, Michelle, you know, find it from the headlines and Trump and all that. Somebody had to say his word name tonight. And I have a poem, but I'm not reading it about him. So whether it's an experience or a headline or just an ongoing layer of environmental anguish, I can usually pull something off. So I just did my last three poems, and at least they've been vetted by the poetry group. They can't be that bad. They may not be my best. They may not be good. But I pondered them and wrote them, and so... So I'm going to share them with you as soon as I pull them out. So this one is inspired by a headline and story about space junk, and it was the first one to be observed, how it interacts with the atmosphere when it comes down, because the scientists think that that will help them predict and be able to identify danger zones if an asteroid ever really does come, so they can tell us where it'll come, and that'll help us. Like, I think I'd rather just go out in the big crater, be obliterated, and that's it. But anyway, so this isn't really following that chain, but it's my own chain. It's personalizing everything, which poetry does. So this is called WT1190F. Electrons charging around a nucleus, space junk we emit forms a steady, whirling, zooming carapace, a shield bouncing off new experience, warding off commitment, not repelling errant planets or asteroids looming large, which would flatten and stick as our other still airborne detritus slows momentarily in horror. Occasionally, orbiting too low, gravity snatches one piece from its path. Spectacular downward plowing descent, a crater, a tsunami, inception of an ice age, inaction of extinction, or burning up, nearly consumed on reentry, an incomplete obliteration, fairy dust in a night sky, minute shards and splinters alight softly on a leaf, a limb, the forest floor, no cataclysm or catalyst whatsoever. We emerge intact, a near miss. Humans avoid eradication after all, oblivious as always. Okay, so this one is, I say almond, and you might say almond, and native-born Chico ends from the, what was the almond center of the world, say almond, but I was born there, I say almond. And it's no longer the capital because the whole Central Valley is now the capital of almonds in the world, I think. So this is called Lifeblood. You can't drink almonds. An ocean of spring blossoms now floods the land, pouring profits into corporate pockets, bucketfuls. No longer the breadbasket of the world, California's the snack bar, a vending machine colossus spewing nuts worldwide, satiating desire on every continent. Almond-encrusted brioche, hickory-smoked almond roca, almond butter, all washed down with almond milk. Ah, almonds, the petite treat. Eat eight a day. Stave off aging. Regrow hair. Evaporate cellulite. Live forever. Draining our lifeblood, new acres stabbed in daily. Almonds planted horizon to horizon, blocking sunrise, shuttering sunsets. Highways carve green trenches. Sierra Nevada's driest in centuries. Cash cow, king cotton, slave diamonds, blood almonds. Savor each mouthful. Swallow your future. Our fertile crescent invaded, our aquifer desiccated. Animals holed up in hollows, rivulets of creatures dehydrating. Investors diverting, pumping, siphoning, blood orchards. Engorged ticks consuming 1 gallon per nut. Sucking, smacking, stealing, savoring.
Thank you for listening to Late Night Poetry Jam. I hope you enjoyed it. This is Pamela Spoto, poet and host, and this is KKRN. Bye.